It's the catch up. Welcome to it. You found your way here on triplem.com.au. Great navigation skills. We've got heaps on the show today, everyone.
Talking about handshakes. And I got to the bottom of just that whole thing with limp handshakes. I just thought it was me who hated them, but I'm glad to know that you don't.
Actually, my favourite part of the show is when Clive Palmer denying a few allegations.
Yeah, they were spurious allegations from you people about the way he distributes his money. And the Grant Hackett situation, a couple of chats about that. His former teammate, Libby Trickett, told us what it's like to be inside the bubble of swimming. And then we had Michael Blucher on to talk. He tries to get people out of that bubble, what it takes to try and break yourself away from something you've done your whole life and move on to something else.
Right, enjoy the catch-up.
Hey, guys, your favourite podcast is just seconds away. But what if you could listen to it without worrying about using data? Got an offer for you right now. If you go to ilovedata.com.au, you're going to get 50 gigs of data for only $59.95 a month. There's no contracts, there's no catches. It's ilovedata.com.au. Open that up on your browser now and let's get into the podcast.
Robin, did you see Clive Palmer coming out of federal court yesterday?
Oh,
where
yes.
There was a public examination into what the hell happened at Queensland Nickel, and he was firing on all cylinders. He was keen to talk to the press about, I'm going to get Malcolm Turnbull a day in court. He's going to have to front up to me, that Senator Michaela Cash. I'm getting her too. He's having a crack at everyone.
He loves a good litigation, does Clive?
I didn't know until this morning some of these things that were discussed in court yesterday, how $45 million on one day went from Queensland Nickel to a number of accounts. Ooh. One payment was to his father-in-law in Bulgaria and totaled $8 million.
Yeah, but he said I would have given that to him in exchange for natural love.
What is natural love?
Sounds kinky.
What about the $8 million? No, what was it? $15 million he paid into another one of his account. And they said, well, what did you do with it? He paid it to one of his own accounts. He said it could have been for parties or something. I don't know.
Oh, my God, $15 million.
What about the $1 million to some woman in Kurdistan? I employ a lot of people. I don't know who she was. Hang around Clive Palmer, the $4 million to a woman he said was running his operations in China, and he gave $15 million to a resort in Bora Bora, which he owned. I don't know what its name is. It was Club Med or something. Look at this bloke. And then he promised he'd have a press conference. He said, yeah, but then right just as the media were already going, oh, we'll get a few more things out of him.
I'm sorry, I can't talk at the moment, sorry, because I have to go to a meeting.
A meeting.
Of course you do.
McDonald's. Clive Palmer, unbelievable. Is that him now?
I believe he's. Well, we've got him, yeah. Clive Palmer, good morning.
Yes, here we go. Oh, God, just another character assassination on Clive. Just another boring morning on the Marlo Show on the river. Who gives a stuff? Just the communists at Triple J having another go at your old friend Clive Palmer. First things first, what was... There was that one payment you said, What was it, $4 million that I said that was for parties?
Yeah.
Is that right?
No,
I was misquoted. That $4 million was for pastries, not parties. and you said, there we go, we're going to have another attack at Clive. What was the other one you said? The money that I gave to my father-in-law. How much? Right. I forgot.
$8 million
that was for natural love.
Yes.
There is nothing more natural than the love between a man and his father-in-law.
Yes.
And you can Google image that if you want.
I don't recommend it on a work computer, but I can still say you
could do it. And then, I'll finish what I've got to say, please. I've got some waffles coming, but not for a little while yet.
Yes.
So Clive said that the other money, how much went to that resort in Bora Bora?
$15 million, and you
That's
didn't even
right.
know its name.
Said, no, shut up. That was for upgrades. Their beds kept breaking when I got into them. Their buffet only had 5 bain maries. I had that extended to 500.
Yes.
All right. And their windsurfers, the weight on their windsurfers, they said they couldn't accommodate a man that weighed 800 kilos. I ask you, what type of windsurfers can't take a man that weighs 800 kilos?
Oh, Clive.
Thanks,
Can I go now, please?
Yes,
this is the most exercise I've done since I moved all that money out of Queensland Nickel in very dodgy circumstances. Oh, I shouldn't have said that.
No, I didn't hear that.
Thanks, Clive. Mato, Ed and Robin, the new Triple M.
Guys, thanks for listening to the podcast. We did mention at the start of the show that we've been handed an incredible deal from Ovo Mobile. So if you switch to Ovo Data SIM, you're going to get 50 gig for $59.95 on 4G. And this is going to change how you enjoy listening to music, video, sport, all the stuff you do on your mobile device with nothing more than a new SIM. And get this, just for you, for listening right now, OVO will give you the first month at half price. Let's do some math. Let's work that out. A whole month to enjoy 50 gig on 4G for just $29.95, then $59.95 after that. So there's no contract, and OVO will instantly upgrade your plan to any better offers they release as part of their More for Fans promise. And with 50 gig, you can afford to catch up with us more often. Open your browser now and get on at ilovedata.com.au. 50 gig for $59.95 on 4G, and then half price for the first month. ilovedata.com.au. Now let's get back to the show.
Guys, yesterday afternoon was the first time I saw it, the footage of Grant Hackett in the back of a police car in handcuffs, and it was such a bizarre situation. And then the poor family had to come out, Nev, his father, who we've spoken to before, mate, I'm sure you have, Robin, comes out talking about the problems that Grant has and his demons. And his brother was saying, look, Grant's had many opportunities to try and turn this around. It's just a bizarre situation, isn't it? That there's every few months, there's a situation with Grant Hackett. And some people are saying, well, what is it about swimming and the distance? There are all sorts of opinions coming out now. But we're joined now by a former teammate of Grant Hackett's and someone that knows him, Libby Trickett. You can sometimes hear Libby on the AMs. Hi, Libby.
Good morning, guys. How are you all?
Libby, okay. You know Grant, well, I reckon pretty well over the years. Did he use swimming to probably keep this under wraps, his mental problems?
It's such a hard thing. Is it the chicken or the egg, you know? The swimming sort of cover and mask, and it's not swimming, it's sport, it's exercise in general, you know. The amount of exercise that we were doing as athletes, you know, oh, for me as a sprinter, it was 35 plus hours a week of exercise.
So what was he doing?
Well, exactly. He was a distance swimmer, the 1500. So, you know, on some level I do think that masks it, because you have those endorphins, you know, coursing through your body naturally. As a natural result of the exercise that you're doing. And on some level, being an athlete, you have to be a little bit bonkers. Hardcore, mentally, you know, you're a perfectionist. You're wanting to achieve these goals. Yes. I don't know that, you know, swimming was the cause of the problem, but whether it masked it on some level is certainly a possibility.
Did you ever see any of this kind of behaviour? Because it's not like it's just a one-off. There's been consistency over the last couple of years of things going wrong for him. So did you see it when he was swimming?
No. I mean, as an athlete, you on some level do protect and mask and not show weakness and all of those sorts of things, because, again, that's a very important part of competition and of trying to achieve what we're working towards. So, this is an incredibly difficult situation for Grant and his family to be in.
Talking about that transition, and it happens with all sports people, it's all over now, and Grant had trouble with it. Oh, there's been numerous other ones. Jeff Hugel, maybe.
I've had trouble with it.
Righto.
It's a very normal thing, unfortunately, because it's a bubble that you're in. The biggest challenge that I faced as an athlete transitioning is going from it's not even the sort of public recognition and all of that. It's just trying to work out what you're passionate about.
Yeah, because you've done the same thing for so long.
You grew up without hobbies. You didn't have to have hobbies, other sports, or any real friends outside the sport. It's a weird life.
Yeah, there's a whole loss of identity there. And for me to try and find a love and a passion and a drive and something to work towards wasn't there anymore. And that's hard. He's achieved so much for the country, and he's, you know, an incredible athlete. He is a wonderful person, but his family were saying yesterday, it's not him. My family have dealt with drug and alcohol abuse and all sorts of mental health issues as well, and it's incredibly difficult to try and support someone who is going through that. It seems to be the boys who struggle the most, I think, whether they don't talk about it enough or sort of masking it.
Look, there's a lot of goodwill for Grant Hackett out there, and everybody wants him to
to be
to
okay.
come good and face up to whatever it is and see him get himself some help. And Libby Trickett, former teammate of Grant Hackett, thanks for telling us today about that transition from elite sports person out retiring and then, all right, what do I do now? And all of our thoughts are with Hackett and his family. Thanks again, Libby.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
If anyone doesn't know, I ride to and from work and then go for a ride during the day on my way home and sort of stuff. Oh, Robin, I'm a cyclist. I've never discussed cycling with you. I don't discuss it with anyone. I just do my thing.
Okay, why?
I'm a lone wolf. Oh, because everyone hates us or hates them. I hate them. I hate cyclists. Did you see that guy on the internet, Ed, in Adelaide? Him and his mate were riding the hills of Adelaide, and they were pretty narrow roads. And he got up, the car went too close to him. Of course, we've had the meter rule. I reckon Queensland motorists, or Brisbane motorists certainly, in my estimation as a cyclist over the last 3 years since they changed that law, you know, you had to stay a meter away, have been unbelievable. Conditions have just... cycling is a joy now.
Really?
People all keep away from me. I've noticed it. I congratulate all motorists. I ride on my own, so I don't usually get too much hate. It's the packs
of pelotons.
The pelotons.
Oh, my God. Mount Coot, Saturday morning when I'm trying to get to Channel 9 to do the Today Show, they feel that it's okay to ride all the way across the road and then get really upset with you.
It's supposed to be too wide.
No one got the memo.
All right. Yeah, I don't like them.
So what do you want to talk about?
Well, I just saw that guy. He got stuck into a driver. I thought, don't do that, mate. You're just giving us any cyclist a terrible day. Don't give anyone a further reason to hate cyclists. And I see there was a discussion on Facebook where I was looking at last night. It happens every once in a while. It starts happening again. Cyclists should be registered. Now, my opinion of that is I'm already registered. I've licensed to drive a car. I pay my registration. Every time I ride my bike, it means it's time I'm not spending in the car. I'm not ruining the roads.
So that's a good thing.
I reckon so. I don't know. Do you think we should be registered if we go through red lights so you can catch us? Yeah.
Well, I have a friend called Bryn who we've actually got up on the line who got a speeding fine being on a bike. Hey, Bryn.
G'day, Robin. How are you?
Good. Oh, you're good. A speeding fine on a bike.
Was fairly fast downhill, let me tell you.
So how did they catch you? What happened? Where were you?
It was at Mount Cutha on a Sunday afternoon, looking forward to a few beers later that afternoon. And coming down the front, I didn't have my speedo. It was broken. My Garmin GPS had it. And so I was just...
Yeah,
they're still there,
Bryn? He's back. Bryn's back. Sorry, Bryn. When we left you, your Garmin was broken and you were coming down the front of Mount Cutha. What happened then?
No,
it's okay. Oh,
all right, they've got to.
Can I finish off? I've hit 74 down there before. So you can go bloody fast down Mount Cutha. It's tremendous. What a great
feeling.
Well,
I'm guessing there must have been a police gun.
Yeah, they set up
and they would have just pulled him up and he got a speeding fine. So you can get caught without being registered.
All right.
Yeah, but what about, this is the one that people will bring up, which is red lights. Cyclists going through red lights.
Oh.
Should they be getting booked every time they do that? If they were registered, you could find their little... their little number
bike.
Plates. Yeah, they have to have the number plate on the back of their bike shorts. Just
so are you
part
for
of the...
registration, Ed?
Nah, I think that might be a step too far.
What are you going to do about school kids? That's what I always ask. What about kids riding their bike to school? That's what you wish that every kid did.
Okay, well, then they have to be registered after the age of 18.
Yeah, well, that would be
there
how
you
that
go.
Would work.
So if you're going
to... Do you want bikes to go on the footpath?
No.
See?
Depends on the footpath.
Yeah.
So you're no for registration. I'm yes for
registration. Do you hate cyclists? Do you dislike cyclists?
I don't hate them. I don't hate them.
They're
and
pests.
I think... No, I just think that I get why they're so aggressive on the road and I get that you have to be defensive in your cycling.
It's scary.
But I think at times they can be really full on and should be able to be clocked.
Can we open
for their
it up?
Behavior.
Yeah. Colin from Crestmead, should cyclists be registered, mate?
Absolutely. And it's not anything against cyclists, but since this law comes in, and Marto, I don't know if you've taken any notice of it, but if you do something wrong against a cyclist, they can get your rego number and they can report you and you get a fine in the mail. If a cyclist, and I see this every day, I'm a truck driver, if a cyclist doesn't keep as far to the left as he can, deliberately goes as close to the lane as he can, and you can't, you know, get around him with that meter to spare, you know, why can't we report him? Why can't we report them for going through red lights? Even with a dash cam in the vehicle, you've still got no recourse.
Yeah, so, that's a point.
You know, and Robin, I agree with you, you know, up to once you're, you know, if you've got kids that are on push bikes, make them exempt. But as soon as they hit the age of being able to get a license, should be a number plate on their push bikes.
Colin, you're a reasonable and sensible man. Thank you for your call. Can we get a few nutcases on, please? Maybe Shane from Melbourne Park will be more fun. Shane, should you have to register a cyclist?
No. Basically, your rego that everybody's screaming about is paid through, for what you pay for your roads, is all paid through your rate. So, you know, if you own a home, you're paying for it through your council. If you're an investor and you're building an estate, you've got to put the road in. So the council then maintains it from there. Oh, so the whole idea of cyclists paying for a road, it's invalid. It just doesn't exist.
What about Colin's point? It's a way to make sure, you know, if we do anything wrong, if cyclists do something wrong, like get
totally
a little
agree.
Number plate.
They do police you. They do that. You know, they can't be everywhere. It's like cars driving around on mobile phones. So they don't pull every car up on it.
Shame.
So
good point. Yes.
It's one of those things. Sure, people get away with it, but how many times do people run a stop sign and get away with it in a car? Same deal. So,
hey Shane, but what about when they put in cycling lanes? When the, you know, because that is a big change to the roads. When they put in cycling lanes, shouldn't cyclists bear some of
by all means use it, but you will find a lot of them have got bottles smashed in them. So you've got to take your own safety into your own hands. You have to go out of it to get around it. So
I haven't been spat on in Brisbane while cycling for the last few years.
Never.
I used to get spat on all the time. And people throwing... Oh, yeah.
That's disgusting.
But the last few years, something's changed. It's all a happier place now.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, Greg. Greg's from Beanley. Hey, Greg. Should cyclists...
Hello, mate. Your call's for a nutcase. You got one.
Oh, okay, go on. Go, right. Greg.
Mate, they should be registered. They should be licensed. They should be insured. Marto, you made the point that you already pay a rego on your car and you've got a car license.
Yep.
I got a motorbike, so why do I pay a rego and why do I have a motorbike license? It's a different vehicle.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with your car or your car license.
Okay. Why are you so passionate about this, Greg?
Mate, they're dangerous. I really believe push bikes are outdated. They should be banned from major roads.
Ooh.
They shouldn't be allowed on major roads.
When you say major roads, do you mean like the M1 and that type of thing? Or do you mean like, bad example, yes.
Major roads in Brisbane, like Gympie Road, sort of roads that haven't got bike lanes, they shouldn't be allowed on there. You're putting a 5 to 10 kilo vehicle up against a 42 ton truck. Who's going to win?
I wonder what they do, like in Amsterdam. Do they have to register? Because, you know, countries where cycling...
They're so stoned, they don't know what's going on.
Another wrong example. Stuart, can you bring us home, mate? What do you reckon? Should they be registered?
No, I don't think they should be registered, mate. You know, you've got to register all your kids' bikes going to school. How's that going to work? Don't we pay enough money to the government already without registering push bikes?
Bloody yes, that's an interesting point. Yes.
Who's going to register their kids' bikes so they can go to school? We're going to have to if it's lawful, but no, I don't think they should be.
You're going to register those Razor scooters and then
skateboards. Yeah, but no. But what you do is you say, like that one of the previous callers, when you're 16 or whatever and you can go for a road licence, then you can take your bike onto more major roads.
Right, as little
kids, you don't have to. So if you're owner of the Gap, should cyclists be registered?
I think so. I think it's just... for accountability of behaviour, you know, people behave very often in the manner they can get away with. And if you're an unidentified cyclist, you can do what you like most of the time. And, you know, just for people to be a bit responsible about how they conduct themselves on the road. And that just keeps everyone safe, keep the cyclist safe.
Yep.
Now, what a clear-thinking individual you are, Fiona. That's brilliant.
Well, the example that we keep getting off air and people wanting to say is the red lights, Marto.
Yep.
People just keep trying to say to us, they run red lights. Why should they be able
to
get away with it?
Can I make a quick
endlessly?
Statement on behalf of some cyclists who may do it?
Okay.
Cycling is all about momentum. As soon as you slow, everyone else just touches their toe onto their brake and then their accelerator and you're going again. It is so tough to get going after you have to pull up at a...
I know, but then if you get taken out by an opposing car, you'd wish you'd stop the momentum.
Okay.
Mike, Mitchell.
I'll just incriminate myself if I keep talking.
Mitchell's from Cannon Hill. Should cyclists have to be registered, mate?
I think they should be registered. And then some insurance as well. Like if they do happen to run a red light, say they get cleaned up by a BMW or a Mercedes or something, who's paying for the damage on the car?
Ooh,
what does happen there?
Question. That's a good question, Mitchell. I don't know. We might endeavour to find out the answer to that because they don't have third party. Mitchell, thank you for your
call.
But
it's never the cyclist's fault, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, of course. Of course you'd say that.
Yeah, well, you would say that. Matt is from Moray Field. Matt, do you believe cyclists should be registered?
Mate, I do to a point. More likely along the lines of compulsory third-party insurance. A major part of our registration is to cover injuries sustained while on the roads. Mm. If you are on a bike, you're more likely to get injured, whether or not it's your fault or not, but you should be contributing to that cost. Otherwise, all the motorists are taking up, you know, our registration is taking up what the cyclists do.
Travis from Albany Creek, what do you reckon, mate?
I reckon no, thanks, Marto.
Why?
You a cyclist?
Well, I am, but I already pay for regos in my house, and so I'm contributing to that. But what about my boy who wants to ride to school? Do I have to register the 12-year-old's bicycle? Mm.
See, I reckon that you don't register until you're old enough to get, like, a car licence, and so therefore kids can still ride around the suburbs but maybe not go on the main roads.
Trav, I'm coming from the same angle as you, mate. I reckon when I'm riding, it means that I'm not in my car and I've already paid for my rego for the damage I'm doing to the roads or whatever it is I pay rego for.
That's right. I think we're all too precious about it, you know. Just take a deep breath. Let people get it, you know. If they go through a light, there's police around the corner that'll eventually catch someone, the same as when they're driving a car.
We can't
police everything.
Take a deep breath is good advice no matter what, Trav, on the roads, isn't it? I think that's not a bad... We hear a lot of road rage incidents, cyclists or not. Take a deep breath is very good advice when you're on the roads. Gary from Bellwood. Now, should cyclists have to be registered, mate?
Well, mate, I had a mate with a pretty expensive Mercedes-Benz and he must have come pretty close to a push bike and never thought too much of it, and he's stuck in the traffic about 5 minutes late. All of a sudden, here's his clunk and there's his side mirror hanging off the side of his Mercedes and a push bike riding off into the distance. It cost him about $1,000 for a new mirror, and what do you do about that?
Oh, my God. That's what we're talking about this morning. What did he do? Nothing. He just had to pay for it.
Had to buy a new mirror and get it fitted because he said, I couldn't believe what had happened. He went, they got me.
It's not like you go to the police and say it was a red bike and he was wearing Lycra. Yeah. It's not going to help.
No.
Well, that's one of the things, is they're registered with a number plate.
But now we have ourselves an expert. It is Dave from Safe Cycling Australia, who was part of the campaign to enforce the safe zone around bikes. You said that's made a genuine change.
I reckon it has.
On the roads. G'day, Dave.
Good morning, folks. How are we?
Yeah, no, good on you, Dave. If you're involved with that meter rule, it's changed the world for cyclists.
Yeah, not a lot of people know that we were the guys that actually campaigned for it in 2013, but we're very, very happy with the way things have panned out.
So, Dave, can you answer this question about third party? Like, if a cyclist goes into a car...
A mirror off a Mercedes.
Like, what happens?
Well, a lot of cyclists these days are insured, whether it's through their state cycling body membership or they've just taken the insurance out themselves. Oh. So a lot of cyclists, particularly if they're riding the expensive stuff, don't have a lot of issues when it comes to insurance. But again, you know, unfortunately, the whole registration thing rears its ugly head. And I think everyone can kind of understand it when cyclists don't have any way of being able to be identified if they're riding off into the sunset. It's the small minority that will actually go knocking off wing mirrors and doing all the stupid things. Mm. And unfortunately, it tars everyone with that same brush.
So do you want registration?
Sometimes you got to wonder whether it's worth it. But generally speaking, no. As I'm sure plenty of your callers have already said this morning, a lot of cyclists own 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 vehicles as well. We all pay rego. And the state government has said themselves on numerous occasions that if they tried to bring in a registration system for cyclists, one, it would be almost impossible to be able to police and enforce it, and two, just the sheer cost of introducing it would be phenomenal and everyone would have to pay.
Yeah. Yep, okay. We appreciate that. Dave from Safe Cycling Australia.
No
okay, thanks, mate. There's plenty of comments on this on our Facebook page if you want to jump on there, a good range of opinions. Brendo, how do we go on the phones, mate?
Oh, not much change, mate. Still in the mid-70s bikes should be registered on Brisbane roads.
I'll be riding an unregistered bike, won't I?
Oh, this guy.
You can get stuff.
Marto, Ed and Robin, the new Triple M.
We're talking about handshakes.
Well, can we talk about handshakes after that Putin and Trudeau, the Canadian Prime Minister,
Trump and Trudeau.
What did I say?
Putin?
Oh, Putin.
He probably gives a dodgy handshake too.
Yeah, I think Putin's handshakes might have some arsenic in them. I would just be careful.
Have you seen the thing of Trump's handshakes? They've done a whole series of them, what he's been doing to people. When he shakes them, he pulls them off balance,
yeah,
he pushes through.
Yeah. But here's my thing. As a woman who prefers to shake hands with people, particularly people I don't know, rather than kiss me, please don't do that. I don't know you.
I find that weird, yep.
You remember when we were having our photos done as a team and the photographer, who couldn't actually remember my name, was just that girl, wanted to kiss me hello and kiss me goodbye. I'm like, dude, I don't know you. Anyway, that's just my little rant.
We all understand blokes' handshakes. You can't be a dead fish.
Well, people are, though. The amount of times that a guy's given me a handshake that's like a just, it slimes off your fingers.
Let me ask you this, Robin. If you were a single woman, right, and you met a guy for the first time and you shook hands, if he dead weights you in the handshake, is he immediately off any potential list?
He's gone.
That's big.
Because, okay, so here's my thing as a woman who can often have to, you know, when I meet people for the first time, particularly men, there's a power shift, right? So you're trying to work out where you're feeling and how confident you're feeling with that man in front of you.
What should we do, though, too?
I think a confident handshake where you take someone's hand and look them in the eye and shake their hand, where there isn't like Trump trying to pull them and say, I'm more dominant than you are, and isn't wet fish like, I'm so pathetic.
Have you ever had a bloke shake you really hard and almost break some, like squeeze too hard?
I had someone that was a former colleague that I often had problems with. Ego-wise, tried to dominate. And I think, isn't that what happened with handshakes as blokes? Isn't that what you're actually doing?
No.
Yeah. Aren't you just saying hello?
If you get a really firm handshake and you've got to go firmer yourself and then the other person goes firmer, that's a real problem.
Okay, but that's a power thing. Mm. Like, it's like who's going to dominate? Okay, am I thinking about
So you're talking, no, you're not. You're talking about women's handshakes versus men's handshakes, which has led me to a question I've had for a while. Did Caitlin have to change up her handshake when Bruce went away?
Oh, good question.
Wow. Do Bruce and Caitlin have the same handshake?
I reckon Bruce changed sex to Caitlin because his handshake wasn't up to it.
That's drastic.
That's why his handshake
was drastic. That is a drastic move. But that's
I've got two options here. Either to get a firmer handshake or I'm becoming a woman. Right, done.
Hang on. Rochelle from Upper Caboolture just called in. You've got a say on this, Rochelle?
Hi guys. I play competition pool, so I thought I'd give you the call to let you know that I deal with handshakes regularly.
Yeah, excellent. What are we supposed to do as blokes?
It's a confident, firm handshake without like squeezing your hand and without just slipping off it. Like you've got to have some commitment to the handshake, but you can't be a wet fish.
Yeah, wet fish. See, no one likes a wet fish.
Does anyone ever try to kiss you though, Rochelle?
Oh yeah, of course. And the kiss, that's probably even worse.
I know, it's so dodgy, but it's interesting because, you know, as the only person in a house with three boys, I have to teach them how to shake hands. And it's
so
very
important
to me that my kids look someone in the eye.
Really
when
important.
They it's really important.
That. Blokes love that.
Oh, do they?
Only get one chance. Blokes love having a firm handshake and being looked at. It's really important.
And we were talking off air, who's the king of the firm but not too firm handshake and a firm look in the eye when you meet them?
It's incredible. We all agreed Wally Lewis. Amazing handshake.
Good on you, Wally.
Good on you, Wally.
He's the king.
I'm a little concerned about actually starting this conversation because I think it's quite personal for people who have hair loss. Baldness.
Oh, you're talking men?
Well, exactly right. So, Ed and Marta, you both seem to have quite a good hairline.
No, mine's sounding great.
Brendo, you've got a cap and you wear it every day.
Oh, you've noticed.
Okay, right. So
that's a technique.
University of Edinburgh has come up with this research and it's the biggest that they've ever done in the entire world, but they're now being able to identify almost with pinpoint accuracy 287 genetic regions associated with baldness. So now it'll just be a DNA test potentially that you could take as a child that will determine whether you're going to grow up and lose your hair.
Oh, that's a bit depressing.
That's quite incredible. But it's the methods of dealing with it that I'm fascinated with. So it's always about do you hold on for as long as you can? Or do you shave your hair? Or like the older Prince William. He's sort of not allowed. He has to just go bizarrely bald.
And he's got that monk cap.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So he's not allowed to shave it or get a rug or whatever. It's sort of undignified.
So you leave the outside edges as long as you can, just hope to fold them over that
Well, the guy who would potentially know, Brenda, are you okay to talk about your hair loss?
Yeah.
Okay, so at what point did you decide to just lob it all off?
It was about a couple of years ago now. Yeah, I was here.
I remember.
Yeah.
It was a bold choice.
It was a big decision because I was only, 24 then? So. Yes. Yep. And I'm getting married later this year, and I always thought at 26 I would get married with a full head of hair. That hasn't happened, but
it's glued.
You know, it is what it is. Like, what can you do? I mean, there is something you can do. I was told, I could take a pill, 100% my hair would come back, but they couldn't guarantee that I wouldn't be impotent if I did take this pill.
Remember so you it was telling like, me that?
What a choice.
Do I want kids? Do I want hair? And kids won out.
You ever thought about wearing a cap with hair, you know,
like
coming out
knee.
The back?
Like Dickie Knee. That's the one. I have, but I don't think it really worked for him. Well, it did. He was,
jeez, it makes people think.
It does.
Is that why you have such a Ned Kelly beard?
Well, I grow a glorious beard, so I like to keep that around and just so that I, you know, I am hirsute on some part of my body.
See, cap and beard's a good technique. I like that.
How weird is it that you can grow hair on the rest of the body but not on the top of your head?
Yeah, it's real weird. Real happy with it.
Do you ever believe that stuff where bald guys always go, oh, well, it's because of our virility? Are they extra virile bald men? Do you hear that one?
I have heard that.
Yeah.
You heard that, Ed?
I do suffer from heart of virility.
I do, you do.
How do you get, so what do you do? What do you do? How do you deal with it? Maybe you've gone for the, you can remain anonymous if you want, maybe you've gone for the tablets and it has brought some hair back. I do know someone who did exactly that. I also know a couple of, how do I put this, friends of mine in the entertainment industry.
Toupee wearers?
No, well, more than that. They've gone like
what?
The full...
The plugs?
Yeah, the full... the good transplant, though. Like the Bradley Cooper, they call it. Or the Steve Carell or the Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
The really serious ones.
I love how you out all these bald men.
I was going to say, I didn't know Matthew McConaughey. Well, I kind of did, actually.
Oh, he's one of the great baldies. How do you deal with the baldness?
He's just a bit of a rug detective.
Oh,
let it go.
You?
Go the rug. Maybe you know someone that's had the rug and
no
you've had to say that.
No one
wears a rug. Oh, come on, Bert does.
Maybe you used to be a rug interventionist. You've pulled someone up on the rug.
Do you know, I always used to get told that it was your mother's hairline, so you looked at your mother's father to see how you would, but you guys have all poo-pooed that.
Yeah, I had a bald, my mother's father was bald. And, I'm
and
not.
You're not, okay.
Blondies always go bald.
Do they?
Yeah, blondies are more likely
apart from
to
Greg
bald.
Norman. Suspicious.
Kane from Wavell Heights. How old were you when you started to go bald, mate?
Oh, I started noticing I was going bald about 17, just my receding hairline, and slowly but surely, she went on me and you start to lose a bit of your manhood and you're feeling no good. And then when it got to about 24, people started talking to me, but they weren't looking at my eyes. They were looking at my receding hairline. I said, hey, my eyes are here, guys. My eyes are here.
My eyes are here.
Boob head.
But then when I was 27, 28, we had a shave for Kira at work.
Hey.
So we shaved all our heads off. And I looked in the mirror and everybody said to me, man, you are the dude, because I'm a slightly tan dude. I'm a Torres Strait Islander.
Yeah.
And at the time, Michael Jordan was the Bob. And man, I'm done with this. I'm the man.
Talk yourself up, Kane. I love it.
Like it. Like it, Kane. Like it a lot. Okay. Sheree from Kingston. Now, where are you right now?
I'm actually in... I think it's Yamanto at the moment.
You're in the car. Who are you in the car with?
I'm in the car with my dad.
Okay. What are you going to tell us? What about dad?
Dad started going bald early 20s.
Yes.
But he hasn't tried to stop going bald. He's kind of gone with the flow of the receding hairline.
And the rest of his hair?
The rest of his hair is still there. He almost has, I guess you could say, a natural mullet.
A natural mullet, beautiful.
Like Michael Bolton. Is it Michael Bolton?
It looks good. I couldn't actually picture him with a full head of hair because my whole life I've known Dad with a bald spot and ponytail.
Pony bald spot and ponytail. That is one of the great images.
Sort of like the Batman from Penguin from Batman.
Penguin, yes. I love that look. God, I love that look.
Adam, Virginia, tell us about balding. What have you done with your hair?
Yeah, hey, crew. When I was about early 30s, I started to notice it receding and had probably, like most guys, that anxiety feeling. And, I tried to hang on, but I eventually just decided to own it and shave it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because since I have, everybody, including myself, look back at photos with hair and say, you look better now bald.
Do you hear that, Adam? You do hear that. Yeah, you're right. You get guys who sort of sharpens their jawline and their gets their eyebrows involved as well, Adam.
What about scars, though, Adam? Did you have any strange injuries that you'd forgotten?
Thankfully, I don't, no. And, I think it's really good just to own it, and it's quite liberating because you take control and, you know, just do it, just own it.
Does it cost you anything to shave? What are the extra costs to you?
Oh, I go through shavers a little bit more, but, you know, I think I sort of figure it's saving a lot more in haircuts, so it's all good.
Well, exactly right.
On you, Adam. Kane, Adam, Cherie's dad, you're all going to the movies. Hard to talk about balding, but you're going to go see Gold starring Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, what a great person to go and see. One of the men who's rejected the baldness.
I would say that I didn't realise how sensitive it was until we've just spoken here. Like, you, obviously it matters to you.
Oh, yeah. It's hard. Hard because I'm young as well, but so is, you know, Kane and Adam, and it is what it is.
You're going to be all right to finish the show?
I'll do my best. Marto, Ed and Robin, it's the new Triple M.
Well, the Grant Hackett being arrested yesterday, it's a sad and sorry story. It's obviously a long-term mental problem and hopefully he gets it all sorted out. But we were talking to Libby Trickett earlier and she was talking about the
athlete's bubble.
That's right. As soon as I heard that word from Libby Trickett, I thought there's only one bloke that I need to contact is Michael Blucher. He's an athlete mentor. He helps athletes transition from elite sport into normal society. And his book, The Bubble Boys, is exactly about this. Michael Blucher, how are you, mate?
Hey, well, Marto. How are you going? Hey, Rob.
What is going on with Grant Hackett? Is this a classic case of a guy in a bubble?
Talking specifically about Grant's circumstances is difficult. We sit and look from afar and we make assumptions about what he is and isn't going through. What we do know is that he's an incredibly goal-orientated individual. He's driven. He's been through a marriage breakup. He's been through drug dependency, not performance-enhancing drugs, but prescription drugs and still not and so forth. So there's a lot of issues. So in many respects, this is the perfect storm. And then we've got the complication, as Marto's just said, from departing that bubble where nothing will replace the adulation, the sense of achievement that comes with gold medals and Olympic representation and living the life as a high-profile athlete.
But how do you deal with that, though? Because potentially every single, you know, medal-winning athlete or, you know, really professionally successful football player or cricket player would be faced with exactly the same thing, but most of them don't end up in this situation.
Again, how do we know that most of them don't? The interesting thing is we see the ones publicly suffer. But I don't know of any athlete who hasn't struggled to transition into normal society. And they struggle physically, they struggle emotionally, physiologically, socially, structurally, and a lot struggle financially. They live a very good lifestyle when they're competing and then go back to one-third or one-quarter of a salary. Frequently in the instances of footballers and cricketers and so forth. So there's a massive transition and we've got the terminology all wrong. We talk about retirement rather than transition. So one of the things that you try and stress with young guys is actually you're not retiring from, you're transitioning to, and I think that makes a difference.
Talking to Michael Blucher, athlete mentor and author of the Bubble Boys, talking about the Grant Hackett situation, but I want to take it down a couple of levels if I could, Michael. What about young guys I've had, mates I've had, who are young and they thought they might have a career in sport, you know, they thought it might happen for them, but they never even quite made it, but that was their whole life growing up, and then they're just, okay, well, what do I do with the rest of my life? What would you say to someone like that?
That is such a common occurrence. We think of every footballer and every cricketer and every swimmer having achieved what they want to achieve. The reality is that it is such a tiny percentage. So for every Darren Lockyer who plays 350 games, the average NRL game is 44. So there's a lot of people who are crashing on takeoff and having devoted such an enormous proportion of their life. I mean, look at Grant Hackett. He would have been in the pool since the age of 6 or 7. So essentially he's had 25 years of living with his head in a bucket of water. And then we're expecting him to emerge from that and go, hey, what's going on, folks? Let's get on with the rest of my life.
Is it true? Libby was suggesting that guys deal with it worse than girls do. But you often see, say, with female swimmers, they go off and have babies?
Yeah, and this is the thing, the whole filling of the void, Rob, and nothing quite fills the void like, as I said, the adulation of medals and premierships and so forth. So it's about backfilling what has preoccupied your life is certainly one strategy. But blokes are notoriously, we're not very good at phoning a friend, are we? We're not about putting our hand up and saying, gee, fellas, I'm really struggling. We laugh about all of those things online. Yeah. On Facebook, we see those skits, and blokes were traditionally not very good. Girls are better at that, but it's still challenging for both genders, I'd say.
Oh, Michael Blucher, athlete, mentor and author of Bubble Boys, talking about transitioning from something you've done your whole life and then just being left out into the world in the Grant Hackett situation. Good to speak to you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, guys.
CSI Motto.
Well, those terrible New South Wales bushfires over the last few days has sparked an interest in me, like a question on how does this work? And I needed help, so I went to the manager of air operations for Queensland Fire and Emergencies, Martin Gibson. Hi, Martin.
Good morning.
Martin, I want to know, and I've seen them over in the news over the last few nights, you know those planes that throw the water on bushfires, not the helicopters, but the actual big DC-8 or 10s or something they are, that suck up the water. I just want to know how that works, because I'm worried that as they're sucking up the water, they could smash into the water. Tell us how it goes.
All right, well, those particular machines, they're contracted by New South Wales Rural Fire Service, and basically they don't actually scoop up water. They land and get refilled on the ground.
Aren't there planes somewhere in the world that do this dip thing? And I thought it was done through suction, and they kind of scoop up water and then they keep going.
They do. And we've got a couple of them in Australia as well. They're called a fire boss, which is basically a converted agricultural aircraft that gets fitted with floats, and the floats have a ram scoop that's at the back. So as they're sort of flying over the top of the water, the water gets pushed up a tube into the hopper that's basically a giant fiberglass tank that sits in front of the pilot. So the likes of the DC-10, it's kind of too big to do that. You can't really fit it with floats. So
I was worried for everyone. So how many tons of water have they got inside one of those babies?
About 44,000 litres.
Whoa.
Robin said before we started this chat, why are we talking to this bloke? And I said, you wait until you're... Are you impressed yet?
I'm interested. Exactly. I'm usually the person that just wants it to happen, and Marto's the person who wants to know how it happens.
Haven't we got one of these big planes? Why have we only got the fire bosses here in Queensland?
They're expensive.
There you go. Like how much? Like gazillions?
let's just say they're not cheap, but they're incredibly effective.
Well, Martin, Tiger Airways is no longer flying to Bali. Could we grab some of their planes?
Funnily enough, there are companies over in the States that are better equipped to try and deck out these machines.
More than Tiger?
You're kidding me. You're kidding me, Martin.
I know. It's crazy. But, they spend a lot of money in refitting these machines out. I guess it's a fit-for-purpose thing as well. So some aircraft perform better when they're loaded at low level than others.
Did you go down and help with the New South Wales bushfires, Queensland?
There have been some fires close to the border that some of our guys have gone to assist with, yeah.
Martin Gibson. Martin, thanks so much for that. Air Operations Queensland Fire and EMER. You do great work. Thanks so much for putting all of your own lives at risk to try and save the property and the lives of the rest of us. Appreciate your time.
Pleasure. We do it for the community. Thank you.
Marta, you happy with that explanation?
Isn't everybody?
I'm happy with that. That was very interesting. Thank you, Marta.
That was potentially boring, but it exceeded expectations.
He was a good guy.
And he was excellent. And coming up tomorrow, how Mr. Whippy Vans work.
CSI Marta.
Yeah.
Only if we can taste test afterwards.
I feel sorry for North Koreans that get on the wrong side of their dear leader, Kim Jong-un.
Because they die.
Yeah, he's playing a dangerous Game of Thrones, isn't he?
Well, he's not, because in Game of Thrones, they build someone up like Joffrey, and then they have a wedding and you might lose your head, but not there. It seems to be a similar game of one.
Yes,
his half-brother, now everyone's seen this by now, Kim Jong-nam was murdered in an airport in Kuala Lumpur. Now, today the details have come out. a woman has been detained in connection with that murder. They had her on CCTV footage, Robin. They said that just after the incident that she fled in a taxi. Now, she's got normal clothes. She's got an LOL shirt on. Yeah. And did you read this bit, which I thought was just an amazing piece, a quite coincidence. The security camera that was pointing directly at the incident inside the airport wasn't working that day.
Oh well. It's like the one at the Norm, yeah, some of those hotels. Remember that one at the nightclub down the Gold Coast? Same brand, I suppose.
Yes.
Those ones that, we didn't have any tape in it.
Oh. Is that how you run it? Oh.
Yes.
Put tape in it.
It's disaster, isn't it? And so they're saying that the way it happened is the two women walked over to Kim Jong-nam. One held a piece of fabric over his mouth. The other one sprayed him with this stuff. And then into his face, all over his face. And then he ran over to some police in Kim Jong-nam, ran over some police and said, "I've been poisoned." And they said, "Well, there's nothing we can do about it. You're going to have to go to the clinic." And then he's tried to get in there, go to the to the hospital, and he's died on the way to the hospital.
That's some potent stuff.
Well, what did they use?
Lynx Java. Yeah.
That's so much stronger than Lynx Africa, isn't it?
Oh, big time.
This Marto, Ed and Robin catch-up is brought to you by the unbreakable Toyota Hilux SR5 with satellite navigation and 3.5-tonne towing and trailer sway control. Search Toyota Value.